I really thank the Lord for our family. And I mentioned now concerning my daughter Carolyn, the oldest one. The only two things I remember, besides the fact, you know, that occasionally they'd have the kids would have a little, you know, squabble between them, and we'd have to spank them for it. And that didn't amount to any big thing, but you know, all young kids would do that. Carolyn told me that I was talking to her about it. The last spanking she can remember having is she got one in the fourth grade. She did something, and it was never against us. I do not remember any of our children ever doing what we told them not to. We said, don't you do that. And they never went right ahead and did it. We never had that problem. But between themselves, and we never allowed this, so we spanked, but it didn't happen very many times. She remembered a few times, and I only remember two things, really, that she caused a problem. One, when she was 2.5 years old, I mentioned last time, that time that she went into that tremendous rebellion of her will. It lasted about a half hour or so, and that was over. And there was one more time in her life. You know, I think any time that you bring up a girl up through teenage to adulthood, and you can't remember more than one thing that happened in her teenage life that was a problem, I think you've got something to be thankful for. Only one thing ever happened in her teenage life that I know of. Now, I mentioned something the other day about her hair, the situation. That wasn't her fault. She wanted to wear it in a way that everybody else was, and there was nothing wrong with it. And there was no confrontation. She came to her mother, and the mother came to me. And I said no, and went back to her mother and back to her. And that was about the end of it. She never contested me about it. She never made an outward fuss about it. She was hood inside. But you see, our children learn to obey. And we never had confrontations between parents and children. And I thank the Lord for that. But one time we took Carolyn, took all of our kids to the Pellet Fair, and we were singing the rodeo. And we took a neighbor girl also. And she wanted to excuse herself and go to the restroom and during the rodeo, and Carolyn went with her. And when they got through, you know how it is in junior high school age? You know, they weren't near as interested in the rodeo as I was, you know. They wanted to kind of see the other young people, you know, walk around the fair and see the young people. You know how kids are. And because they knew that I didn't know exactly how long a restroom stop was, they took about an extra 10 minutes. And so they walked down to the end of the, you know, the following, and, you know, just walking along, you know, and they walked down the other way. And then they came back. And they didn't stay an hour. She knew better than that, but it's about 10 minutes. Now, that was no big deal. The average kid would have done that and thought nothing about it. But she was feeling a little guilty coming back because she went to the restroom stop and she knew that they went out and took this little trip. And it might have been her girlfriend that kind of induced her to do that. And she, but anyway, as they came back in, if they would have said nothing, it would have been fine. It wasn't that long. But she felt constrained to make an excuse. And she made an excuse. And I knew the excuse was flimsy. And Carolyn had never lied to us. Now, I want to know how I handle it. I did not bawl her out in front of her friend. I did not make a scene out there in front of her friends. I said nothing. And when we got home tonight, we dropped her off. I didn't land on her when she hit the door. I went home, and she went into her bedroom in the evening. And I went into her room, knocked her door, and went into her room. And I said in a soft voice, I said, Carolyn, you lied to me tonight, didn't you? She nodded her head. I said, would you like to pray about it? And she nodded her head. So we knelt down, and she asked the Lord, told the Lord she was sorry. I prayed for her, loved her, and that was it. And that's the only time she's ever done that. And she probably wouldn't have done it if she would have been alone. So, you see, I had a number of people state the appreciation for the testimony I gave. But from my side, you know, I was telling all the negative points. And they wanted to hear more. I don't have many more, because really and honestly, there were not very many things that happened, which I think is a great plus, and I really appreciate. That was the only time she ever lied to me in her life that I know of, and those are only two incidences that ever happened that was really a problem that I'm aware of, besides those little kitty squabbles that I mentioned. Now, with my boy Daniel was always a very sweet child. He was a sweetheart. And when he was working in the school, Christian in the office here in a corporation, in a Wyman's office in bookkeeping. Everybody in the office loved Daniel, liked him. Everybody likes Daniel because he's who worked with him because he's not a belligerent type of person. I mean, he's a sweet person. He's always had a sweet soul. And Daniel was an easy boy to bring up. He was not a problem maker at all. He was all up to that one. But I mentioned that one time when I began to pastor, and he began to feel a loss. All my kids went to public schools, and public schools were not as bad in those days, but they were still public schools. They had fun today. We just one little short period I mentioned. I didn't want you to have a wrong opinion like we had a big problem with him. It was that one short period, and when that was taken care of, right, he was all right again. Now, somebody asked me, wrote me a note and said, are you condoning slapping the face of children for punishment? And some thought I was, and some said, no, I think he isn't. And I would like to publicly tell you how I feel about that. I think it's one of these questions that needs qualification. I think that when a child is young enough to spank, you should only spank in one place. Well, there's two places, but generally on the seat of learning. And that's the only place you should normally spank them. I'll give a qualification in a minute about that. You should never, and a child haul off and slap them across the face. In the first place, you know, particularly a father, but you know, your arm is long. There's a lot of leverage, Joe. There's a lot of power in that arm. No little thin vertebrae, little thin jaw, you know, and so forth. You know, that's a lot of power you can put against a face like that. It's very dangerous. You should never do that. Besides, it's the wrong place to hit them. And at that age, when real young and emotional and immature, they should be spanked on the seat of the pants. Let me allow me a little short piece of training here. It's important when you spank your children to know what to spank them with. And you should not be using anything like a switch that's thin. They can leave welts, like a willow stick. You should not be losing anything like a belt that's flexible. They can leave welts on the outside of the skin. You should leave nothing flat and thin that has any sharp edges or any holes in it, because they tend to shear the skin right there. They can leave welts, even if it's light. The object should never be heavy. You can bruise the bone. You can bruise the muscle. Anything that's heavy, you know, like a half-inch paddle like that is way too heavy. You should not use a spoon with a cup like this. You should not have a cup of effect. You should not leave anything with an edge on it. You should not leave anything with a bent like this, so it has a small point. There's a lot of energy can be transferred to a small point. That's how karate people break things with all the energy to a small point. That's why hammers work. That's why high-heel shoes make dents. You should have something like these paint paddles. You know, they're made out of pine. They're really light. They're not heavy. And you can, and with a small child, you don't have to normally hurt them. The very fact that you're unhappy with them and you're disciplining them and they cry and they're upset, that's enough. That's enough. Now you get a stubborn kid, and if a kid is really stubborn and he's got his jaw set, he's a little older. You should not have to spank. You should not necessarily spank him until he cries, because some of them you're going to injure him first because he is set. But you can thrash him hard. Some boys won't cry. That's all. They're not going to cry. And to whack him until they finally break him to cry, when he's already decided to be tough about it, you don't have to do that. You lace him real good until he's had a good spanking. Send them to his room, and that's enough. Now, if they rebel at the end of it, now that is something different. If they're this way against you, that's different. But if they just will take it, you don't have to make them cry. Now, a paint paddle, you know, they'll even break at the appropriate time. Now, it does depend on the age of the child and how much padding they've got and what they're wearing. That does make a difference. There are girls, for example, like maybe in the second grade that, you know, they'll have, you know, a big standout dress, a lot of petticoats, and you can't really spank them on the bottom, you know. without lifting the dress, which you don't want to do, and so you might want to just spat them, spat, 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 on the back of the thighs. And that's the all, and that's the time you would do that. So you don't have to embarrass them by lifting the dress, or you get all that poof, you know, it's not doing anything. And so you can spat, 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 you know, that type of thing. When children get past about the, normally you shouldn't have to spank children past about the third grade. On a rare occasion, up to the sixth grade, you might have to, on a rare occasion, you know, take somebody aside and really give them a spanking, but not normally. That's my feeling. But when you get to teenage, you know, when you're not spanking them, and they stand up to you in rebellion, and their eyes and their face are full of rebellion, and out of their mouth there comes a rebellion or curse words or that which is, you know, sharp against you, I believe that the only thing to do is to slap them as hard as you can right in the face immediately. That's the very best thing to do for rebellion. Not to go to your room. You're not going to go to this for a week. That is not really the way to treat rebellion in my mind. Just rebellion that flows up and comes out of the face, I think you should immediately slap them right across the face. That's exactly what I think you should do. I think it's the exact right thing to do. Right where all the problem is. Right there. Immediately. You're not going to put up with that. And I see nothing against that in the scriptures, morally, or in any other way. I think they should not be allowed rebellion. But anything else, you should not do that. I don't think you should do that for anything. You should not make that when you're mad because they did this or they lied to you or something else. That's something different. But rebellion is different. In the Old Testament, rebellion that was not curbed resulted in stoning. And this is less than that. And they did not stone their children for anything else but rebellion. So before you decide it's too much, think of that. And God was the one who set that. So think of that. Now, so we had really no confrontations directly except for that one time. That one time when I was letting him down and didn't know it. And that thing came up, and it was a way of trying to find me, and he found me. But then we turned the thing around, praise the Lord. David was, in spite of the fact that he was, you know, more energy and so forth, was never a problem in being brought up. I don't remember any confrontations in him with him till after he was grown. Him and I had some theological tussles, and he was like the proverbial bulldog. British bulldog that would sink his teeth in and he wouldn't let go, you know. And we had to go around a few times and then a few more times. But he afterwards, he had set himself, but he was kind of hard to move. But then afterwards, he thought about it and softened way up and got way more open-minded about it and came back and you know, talked about it in a real sweetheart way and okay, and he could maybe see that and he opened up. And but we've had a good family, and we haven't really had a problem with them in any way that you could, you know, it was overt. And I really thank the Lord for that. When you raise three children, and you can't think of hardly anything, I think you can be thankful. Now, a couple things more, and I'll quit. When I was growing up, I always was taught to follow authority, and I always obeyed. I mean, I obeyed just like that because my parents would not allow. They were consistent. They had lots of love, but they were consistent in authority. So I never missed a day of school except unless I was sick. I never got in trouble with the teacher. I never had a problem with anyone like this. I always made sure I understood authority, and I stuck with it. The only time I ever got a problem with a teacher, the only thing that ever happened was I was in high school as a junior, and I walked a girl to class. And the time I got to my study hall, I hit the outside of the door handle and the bell rang. So I walked in, you know, 3 seconds late. And now today, I probably wouldn't even notice that. They come and go like Grand Central Station. But I opened the door, and she said, you come in after school and stay an hour. Now, what I didn't do was stand there and argue with her and fuss with her. Well, I was only 3 minutes late, 3 seconds late. See, I didn't do that. See, that's a wrong attitude. See, I knew I would never do something like that because my father would never allow it to ever happen, come out of my mouth. Because he had a long friend, it was a razor strap. He used it to strap his razors. He also used it to strap any children that would ever say anything back. And he never allowed it. And so I went and I sat down. And I thought for about 5 minutes. And I walked up to a desk. And I said, I wonder if I could explain something to you. She said, yes. And I said, well, I said, I'm a student coach in wrestling. And I'm supposed to, after school, teach a class. And I said, the reason I was late is I walked a girl to class, and so I was, the time I got back, I was a little late. I didn't mean to be late, and I was only about 3 seconds late. I said, I don't have any work to do in study hall. I'm up in all my assignments, so I've got nothing to do. And because of this, I would like, if with your permission, to write a paper during the study hall for you instead of staying after school tonight, if I may, as an alternate. And she said, well, what would you write on? And I said, you name it, and I'll write it. And that so impacted her that she said, well, you seem to have a good attitude. Well, just forget it. And that was it. Because, you see, I went and I talked with a soft attitude. I wasn't defensive. I wasn't belligerent. See, there is a right way, students, to talk to your teachers, and there's the wrong way. You can blame them, but then you approach them the wrong way. You say it the wrong way. Defiance is in your eyes, see, or something. And then you wonder why they take the attitude they do. It depends on how you see it and what you do. One thing more and I'm done. I had a job when I was in the ninth grade. In summertime, I took this one particular job. My father was dying of uremic poisoning. We had no income coming into the family. My brother was off. Well, I guess he was. Bob was just off, I think, in his first year in Bible school, perhaps. I'm not sure about all this. But anyway, I got a job in a chicken ranch with 8,000 chickens, taking care of 8,000 chickens. And I was a city boy. And this woman had died, her husband had died, and so she was alone with this ranch. And I was ninth grade. And there's two of us kids. We were out waiting to pick beans or something, or pick beans, and this truck come up and stopped and said, you kids want a job? Do you want a job? And he yelled out, we don't want to pick peas. And she didn't say anything about picking peas. And she said, not you, the other one. And I went over the truck. She said, how would you like to have a job working on a chicken ranch? And I needed work at the time, and I said yes. So I got in the truck, and away we went. And wages was, you know, much smaller in those days. I was being paid 50 cents an hour, which sounds terribly small now, but things were much cheaper in those days. That was the days when bottom of sirloin was 25 cents a pound, and, you know, things like this. Potatoes were a cent and a half a pound and so forth. Well, anyway, the carpenter told me at the end of that day, about a week later, he said, you're the first kid that's lasted a week. This woman had such a temper, and she was so hurt because her husband was died, and things were going bad in the chicken ranch business, and they were having to sell a lot of them. We took them down, and they were sold thousands of them as fryers, and we'd go out and we'd buy them and bring them in and sell them, and I had seen all these chicken houses. And her and I did them alone, although she let me do all the worst ones myself. And I worked 12 hours a day, plus the travel time. And I was only in the ninth grade. And I had to lift 100-pound sacks for mash and so forth. And we'd clean out all these houses all day long. I would do this. And, you know, the average kid would never do this. And I put up with guff from this person. And her and Theo. One day, for example, we're going from this chicken. It was hot. It was in August, and I was working, and I'd have to run to this barn and dump all this mash and take all this stuff and go all the way run back to this house and run this sort of thing. And I had trouble with these heavy sacks because, you know, I wasn't much heavier than that myself. And I had trouble and I couldn't get them up and I was wrestling with them and the sweat was pouring down. And every time I passed, I came up just in a U-shape and back to the bun. I passed the shed and has a water faucet. And every time I passed, I looked at that water faucet and I was like, you know, I was thirsty. And I didn't even dare stop for the water. And finally, after about an hour of that, and I had this extra trouble, I came back and I couldn't resist that water faucet anymore. And I threw myself down at it and turned it on and drank and drank. But it took me so long up there fooling with these sacks because I'd lost them. They got to come down and I was trying to get them back up again. And I only weighed 133 pounds myself in the ninth grade. And these sacks were 100 pounds. And she finally wondered what was happening. So she came up and she rounded the corner and there I was down there drinking water. And she was sure I was goofing off. And she says, well, there you are. I've done it in a hot chicken house and there you are waiting for you and you're up here fooling around. See? And she bawled me out and I said nothing. I took everything she gave me because, you see, I learned discipline. I learned authority without answering back. And so I said nothing. And I went back to work again. Now, she liked me because of my accent. You know, she was English. And when I got in the truck, she said, she heard me talking, she said, are you English? And I have an English ancestry. So I said, you know, most people mean, you know, what ancestry? I said, yes. And she thought I meant from England, and I was in like that. And so she really liked me. And another kid was hired that day, and she fired him before the day was over. And so we worked alone then. Now, she kept just me and had nobody else. She was having two, but she kept it. The turnover was every couple of days. And I stayed with her. I was the only person because I would put up with it. Everybody else would quit. They wouldn't take the work nor the guff. And one day she said, we had these great big crates. We would stack up real high in the trucks and put ropes around them. We'd go out and we'd get you. She said, put the crates in the truck. So I put the crates in the truck. We got them all roped up. She says, get in. So I got in. We drove and we drove and we drove and we drove and flew up to Paul's Bowl. We went out and she contracted to buy 3,000 chickens. She said, okay, get the chicken fence so we can catch them. And I said, I didn't bring the chicken fence. She didn't say bring the chicken fence. She said, get the crates on. And she blew up. She says, sometimes I think you're dumb as some of these American kids. Because I didn't tell her. So we had to catch them by hand, pick them up, you know, and all this. So we did it. But we come to these long, the worst ones, the little ones, 1 week old and the 2 weeks and the 3 weeks, they weren't bad. Concrete floors and peat moss and the lime, and all, it all came up easy. But they had these old, long floors, about as long as this whole thing, you know. Every board that wide, every one was off from the other one, old, wooden, warped, where the fire was about 12 weeks old. And that was something else. And you couldn't let them pick the stuff, and you had to open up to them. They were all going to rush under, and on the shovel, and then the wheelbarrow, and that stuff was hard to scrape up, and she always found an excuse to be gone at some other meeting over in Tacoma. And I, all day long, I worked in those big, long houses for those thousands of chickens, and they would be picking and everything, you know. And I'd work hour after hour. I'd be late at night, and she'd come back, and she always felt so sorry for me that time of night. That, you know, she'd buy me dinner. It was late. It was dark out. She'd buy a dinner for me. Or she'd brag on me, you know, and all this type of thing. And she was feeling guilty. But at the end of the first day, she gave me a raise, 15-cent raise. And then the first day, she liked me so well. Now, you see, I was able to handle something that an average ninth grader would never handle because my parents made us work. We learned to obey authority. And so I got along with her, and she loved me. She really loved me. I mean, she was just this way, you know. She would fuss at a cat, you know. I mean, she'd fuss at a water faucet. I mean, anything, you know. She had demons inside of her, and she was hurt. And any little thing, why she'd blow, but she recovered, you know. And that's a testimony for some of you kids. You know, we need to build a little bit of the old pioneer spirit. Build something that can take some things without having to shoot back. But you see, television, I teach you to snap back. Snap back, see. And if you wanted to go out in the job world and be worth something and not get into trouble and so forth, you know, learn to obey your parents. Learn to have integrity. Learn to take things. And then someday when you're placed in a place, God can put you in a place of authority and you can demand things because you took things. But if you never took things, how can you take authority and demand of others? You can't.